Okay.
All right. Good evening, everybody. I'm going to call this meeting to order. It's the American Rescue Plan Act Special Committee, October 25th, 2023. It's 5:10 p.m. And could I have you call the roll?
Criswell.
Here.
Corcoran.
Here.
Levine.
Yep.
Lopez is absent. Ferry.
Here.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Could I get a motion to approve the minutes of the September 27th, 2023 meeting?
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Great. All right. We are going to jump right into the project reporting. With Nate,
sure.
I want to go for this. Okay. So, I just want to acknowledge our Director of Economic Development is here today. I don't think you've been to an ARPA meeting.
No.
So usually what we do is we go through all the projects. We have 20-some projects that are happening, and we usually go through them and try and assess where they're at in terms of some of them are still in a stage of we've just assigned monies to the project. Some of them we've actually got contracts set and sorted. Some are actually completed at this point. So we'll go through all the projects. And if anybody has updates or questions about it, this is our moment to kind of go through that. So this will actually give you a good overview of what we've been spending the ARPA dollars on.
Appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay. So we're starting with, we have over 20 projects, but we're starting with the segment of projects that are completed. Starting with the purchase of Elizabeth Manor, which is a completed purchase, and that was done with ARPA funding, so the ARPA funds have been expended. For that purchase. Golden Hill Jail demo, that is actually, I did talk to DPW this week, and that is confirmed closed, so probably on the next tracker that'll be updated. And particularly, we have our ARPA report due on Tuesday of next week, so some of these numbers, which do follow the U.S. Treasury numbers, will be updated as well.
Okay.
So we'll get a, so that'll be more of a total.
Great.
So we do have three projects that are just worthy of a mention for COVID pay, CSN, and POD, which these were done during the pandemic before our division was in place. So both they're placeholders and there has been expended funds in those categories.
So for Director Lynch, CSN is a constituent services navigator program that we attempted and it really didn't work well. So we kind of pulled the money back from it. Well, we spent the money on it, but we pulled the plug on the project itself. I think it's being rethought in terms of the new website and how we're going to be able to better connect with our constituents through other electronic media.
Excellent. I'm trying to get this to a better view. But I'm moving now to our in-progress projects, where we have the bulk of our projects. Brownfields, I have talked and continue to talk with Kristen Wilson, who is working to assist P&L on their phase one reports. I knew we got four received from Labella, but I'm expecting actually that there's more than that at this point. So that is still going along. And actually, she is, just as a side note, there has been identified, because of some of the Labella reports that have already come back on some of the more highly impacted properties, I believe Kristen Wilson is going forward and trying to get some other grants to assist with that cleanup. And so I think that's also a very good and positive move.
Dennis, do you want to chime in on that at all?
Oh, no, I think there is a resolution in front of the legislature to essentially ask us to allow for apply for an EPA.
That's what I thought.
Grant, yeah.
Okay, so, clear. Thank you. Okay. Director Doyle, I should say.
So we have some visitors from who can talk better than me, I would say, on Crisis Stabilization Center. And Jolene, please feel free to go ahead.
Jolene, when did you start with us?
I started July 6th, so I'm fairly new.
Welcome. Tell us a little bit from where you come from. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I came from PeopleUSA. Actually, I was their chief operating officer for 5 years, but I worked there for about 11. So a lot of my background is in starting crisis programs, Medicaid billing, and
and just so the committee knows that when Eve and I put together the resolution for Crisis Stabilization Center and Respite Houses, PeopleUSA is where we went. We went down to Poughkeepsie, we had meetings with the team down there, saw the facilities, heard a lot about the success of their programs, and that was really one of the models that we use, one of the top models that we use for putting together our thoughts about what we wanted to see in a crisis stabilization center.
Great. So as you know, the stabilization center is going to be located at 368 Broadway. Since I started, we've really tried to push forward the construction and get on a really strict timeline. So the bids are actually open tomorrow, so we'll know better who is actually going to apply for construction. We made it very clear to whoever applied we would like to start construction as soon as possible. Our goal is February, getting through contracts and all of that. So I did bring a couple copies of the floor plans. If I only have a couple more, I'll leave them on the table if you want to see them. I kind of go over what the space is intended to look like. And I don't have them on the copy here. So it's an intensive stabilization center, so it's going to be different from the one in Dutchess, where it's going to have more robust services. So a big piece of this that's different from any stabilization center in surrounding counties is going to be providing MAT services. So medication-assisted treatment can start on site. Within 24 hours, someone is either starting an IV medication and connected to services. So a big proponent of the stabilization center is the first step to the next step. So it is going to be staffed with nursing staff, case staff, social workers, peers. So that piece is going to be obviously really helpful with the fact that we don't have beds right now in the hospital. The space was really created based off what the OMH and OASIS licensing looks like, so the premises have to be set up a certain way. So that's where you'll see, and I can kind of explain to you a little bit about what it looks like. There's two separate entrances. One would be a main entrance for youth and individuals. There's also another entrance on the other side of the building.
Can you tell us which side is Broadway?
Yeah, I think I gave away all of my Yeah, let me show you here. All right, I should stand so it's easier. So if you see this big gray section here,
mm-hmm.
right, that is going to be facing the parking lot that is behind Broadway.
Got it.
Okay, Broadway is going to be in the front here,
so
where
Broadway,
you have the central area.
So this is Foxhall Avenue here.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Got it.
So you'll see actually on Broadway over here where you have the little gray area, there's a little door there. That's going to be a secure access point for police drop-off. So
this is the up the hill. There's like a
little walkway,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
It's under the bridge that connects the old hospital.
Got it. Thank you.
So when police officers kind of meet someone in the community, they don't necessarily need to be arrested, they're struggling, they need resources, this is where they will come into a separate access point, which is going to be mandated for licensing to be approved through the state. And then you'll see over here the main entrance by the elevators, you'll have another security booth there. There will be security there 24/7. So you'll see when you first walk into the building, there's actually a space for locker rooms where people can put their belongings securely, especially if they're homeless, that's all they own, so they want to make sure it's secure. There's a laundry facility, so people have the opportunity to do laundry, and also an eating kitchen facility where people have the opportunity, if they happen to eat, to get some food. You'll see over here in the smaller pink sections, right when you walk in, those are youth rooms. They do need to be separate, and that's why they're spread out. The light blue areas, those are going to be private offices where people can do private one-on-one sessions when kids are especially family treatment and they want some private area. If you go down the hallway, you're going to see the two big larger rooms by that police access point. Those are adult rooms for people in crisis for observation. On the top here, you're going to see those little kind of buckets in between the green area. That's actually going to be for medication-assisted treatment. So that's going to be separate with an observation room looking in by the nursing staff to monitor people when they're induced through medication. That's kind of a big overview of what the space looks like.
That's great. Can you tell us a little bit about money?
Yes, we can talk a little bit about money. So we'll obviously know more when the bids come in of what the cost will be. We do understand there's about 800 and something thousand left over from the ARPA funding after purchasing the building and closing costs that will go towards construction. We do have a cost estimate right now that is coming in around $2.4 million, but we have, the executive has put in the budget for using opiate funding, which we worked through with the attorney's office to put towards construction, so we should have enough to cover the cost.
Great. Sounds good. Thank you.
Did you also share with everybody about the pancake breakfast on Thursday?
Oh, yes. So tomorrow there is a breakfast. I will not be in attendance, but Joanna will be going and a bunch of DMH staff will be going. People USA is putting on a kind of like a play that they will use their staff stories to be acted out and kind of show people that the people that are working there have lived experience, what their experience has been utilizing services, if they're in the military. It's very unique. So if you're interested, you can sign up on their website. It's tomorrow morning at 9.
Thank you.
All right, so food security and access would be the next project. I did get a invite already for the Q4 Ulster County Food Security and Access Network Coalition. They will meet likely in early November, I believe, and that's getting set up. In the packet for the ARPA committee, the notes from the previous Food Security and Access Network meetings are in there, mm-hmm. so those are all available for the committee. And there is a deliverable for a report to the county for needs, food security and access needs to be provided to us from the vendor, which is Family of Woodstock. They are working to receive additional input from the coalition. The other piece, of course, is I think we did receive approval from the legislature on the contract for the Hudson Valley Community Foundations of the Hudson Valley. I tend to say it backwards. And that's wonderful. We will be moving forward and getting that contract signed, and they will then be able to start the grant program. So I think that's a very needed thing. And now we are moving. I don't know if there's any questions. If you always can stop me at any point. green energy retrofits and job training. There was a meeting on the retrofits today. Ashley Long, who isn't able to join us tonight, did attend. So she's been keeping tabs on that for the division. I can say that all the scoring and like home energy audits have been completed, and I think they're just waiting for the reports on those audits to come back, and then they'll move forward with more of the needed pieces for doing retrofits work.
And I just want to thank Legislator Green, who is here. Mm-hmm. Thank you again for pushing this. Thank you.
And then there is the Communities for Local Power piece, where I know they've been working hand in hand with RUPCO and receiving, so I see that as generally going well. Legal Services of the Hudson Valley, I did put in, I thought it would be helpful in this instance to see that we did process the first invoice, and so that work is getting done, and that is being done in cooperation between our division and Department of Finance as well as DSS. Mental health kids in schools, I haven't reached out to the Deputy Commissioner of Mental Health as much this month. I did get an excellent report from her last month, so this is potentially a little bit out of date, but the reports have been good. We did receive one additional invoice from LaSalle, the vendor on this project, and progressing well. And I do believe there was some money put in, kind of outside our purview, but I believe there was something in the 2024 operating.
There is, and that's what I was just going to ask. When does this end being an ARPA project, and when does it just become a county project? Is it calendar year 24?
So starting in January.
And yeah, okay.
Depending on how the funds are expended, but yes, through the end of the calendar year should be an ARPA project.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And we've been watching, we're getting closer to, there's $750,000 of ARPA money, and then there's the additional for the opioid settlement. And the way invoices are being processed is ARPA money is being expended first, then opioid settlement. So we're actually starting to get to the point where we're watching how much is left and when is that going to flip over.
Great. Thank you.
Nonprofit grant, Molly's been doing a lot on that. We have been processing different additional invoices. We are also watching very closely and have sent out a number of emails going back a month, 2 months ago, and prior to notify folks, you know, that there is a deadline on their contract unless there's some sort of compelling reason they need to provide to us in writing where they need additional time. And there has been a few cases where we've received that, and we are working with the nonprofits to provide typically 6 more months, depending on, you know, a new and updated timeline for the program. And so, you know, just kind of high level, we have the numbers of where we are. We do, if you look, contract signed, we're now at 49 out of 50 because there is a new contract we're going to do to make good on the Small Business CARES program. There's one amendment that will go to Shadowland, and then there's a new contract that is for
Pine Hill.
That's actually an amendment we've done.
Oh, we did that one.
But it's Hudson Valley Historical.
Right.
Yes. So just making a note of that. We are also watching for, you know, we did make this just a note here that this was, nonprofits are beneficiaries of federal funds and ARPA, and so this grant program was done with a little bit more eye towards expediency. We hope to get full compliance with final reporting, and we will certainly reach out and remind folks. We provide them advance funds, so we have a little less leverage in that instance, but I think it was a good call with providing them a lot of flexibility so that we could reach like smaller nonprofits. So we may see that in these numbers about final backup documentation, but we're working hard to get it. And actually, for next meeting, we're hopeful that maybe we can provide a little something on some of the outcomes.
Great.
All right, so OSI Trails, I did provide it's like a midsummer report, but actually they did, I have a paper copy. They provided a new report just this week, which is great, and so I did update these percentages. They are well into construction on the two trails for the Ellenville-Worthing area. And actually, they invited us to a site visit. They feel comfortable where we can see the progress. So.
Oh, that's great. Are they going to do another, like they did for the first one, kind of a ribbon?
I think we'll do a ribbon cutting eventually.
Yeah.
I'm hoping the division can go out there in November just to look at progress.
Great. Let us know about that.
Sure. We'll thank you.
Yeah, but we have to ride bikes.
Is that right?
I'm just
saying. All right.
Down to Ellenville?
I don't think so. Well, we can like take a van with our bike
to the top of the trail, have like little squirt bottles.
Yeah.
Wow. This is
and everybody needs to help.
Perfect. That's great.
Parks. We have 4 resolutions in front of the ARPA committee tonight. Our working goal for getting the remaining contracts drafted and into resolution is to try to do 4 more for November, to go in for decision by the legislature in December, and then we would have 7 remaining after that, which we would hope to have entered in January for decision in February, and that's how we're hoping to get through them all. Route 114, Route 28, I have received information from Dennis Larios, the engineer for the town of Ulster. The general timeline is that there's going to be some things needed, and there's still into getting DOT, Department of Transportation approvals. I know they've been waiting on that. So the thought is that for approvals, there'll need to be some time through the winter, and they hope to start in the spring.
Is this because of the roundabout, the approvals for the...
As you go under the New York State Thruway.
Right, under the Thruway.
Yeah.
Okay,
so.
All right.
The sewer and water grant program, we've received 5 invoices, so there's a lot of disbursement requests that we're receiving currently, which I think is great. There's a number of municipalities that have already completed work and wasn't required by the contract, but in some cases the disbursements are actually ending up being reimbursements for work already completed. So we're working with municipalities on that to get those out as soon as we can.
Were you able to connect with Jean about her question about the...
I did. I called and gave another message, but okay. I haven't heard back from her.
All right.
Yeah, but I'm aware.
I'll follow up and I'll just push her to move that question forward.
Yeah, I'm absolutely happy to talk to her.
Okay.
I did hear from Saugerties. We are still working on contracts. We have four that have kind of gone silent at the moment. There's a lot going on with parks, but I do intend to loop around and work through those as best as we can. But essentially, just to name it, we have Saugerties, Gardner, Shawagum, and Sopus that we're still working on for those contracts. Right.
And Legislator Levine is going to give us a report later in the meeting about the potential for this other Saugerties.
You got one, Chair?
Yep.
Silver Gardens, there is a lot happening. We are Ulster County is being one of the many funders on the project. We are part of a email pool that is all about getting ready for closing. So I get emails actually daily as far as all the different banks and HCR and all the different funders involved and how the many documents coming together for closing. They did put in... There is a request which Ed Jordan, the head of purchasing, is handling. It is a request from RUFCO non-competitive procurement. And there are exceptions under ARPA. They have been working with DGH, which is their geothermal provider, since 2020, and they've provided us a number of documents about that, all of which have gone to purchasing department. And so that is in process. There's been no decision made on this request from RUFCO to work with their existing geothermal provider, but they have. I just want to make the committee aware that they have made a request for non-competitive procurement to the county. And the county, based on documentation provided, it's a little tricky because the county has the right as a recipient of federal funds to allow it, but you know it needs to be done in the right way, and we need to have the proper justification if there's ever an audit from ARPA funds. So
does the legislature have to approve that, or is that just something that can go through our lawyer?
At the moment, I've just brought it to the head of purchasing.
Okay.
I've made, of course, the county executive level aware, and I am doing everything and at the administrative side to try to follow the correct protocols.
Okay.
I think we might go to the county attorney at some point.
Okay.
Small business. So we have processed a number of invoices, and this is a little... I wanted to go with what was approved in New World, but there are some invoices beyond this that are in process, and we have disbursed $470,000, and I think it's going to be up to $600,000 fairly shortly, which I just to share that program is moving along rapidly then at that point with disbursement.
So all the contracts are sorted now with the revised contracts? Everybody's gotten a revised contract, and we're good on all that?
So as far as the county contracts with USIDA, we have two contracts, and they're both signed now. One had to go through an amendment. So
right.
The existing CARES 2.0 amount was brought down to $580,000, and
right.
then we did a new contract for a segment of the awardees, which is about $390,000,
mm-hmm.
and that is signed. So we're moving forward on those two contracts. There also has been a shift of $23,468 that has gone from small business to the county, back to the county with the nonprofit program.
Okay.
It actually was an interdepartmental transfer.
Right.
So the money was always with Department of right. Finance, but it's gone between the line.
But I guess what I'm asking is, have the awardees received their new contracts?
This is a receipt of question.
Okay.
It is.
and yes, okay. Everybody, they're executed.
Okay, got it. Thank you. And we'll talk more about this program in a little bit, too, as well.
Sounds good. So that brings us to the end of the projects in progress. Now we do have a few projects to start. agricultural crisis relief. And I'm gonna, I don't know if the, if economic development wants to speak on any of these, I'm happy to give you an opportunity. There'd be either for Main Street or agricultural crisis relief.
Sorry, I'm losing my voice. We are in the process of interviewing for this position, looking at resumes, and also reaching out to collaborative partners to see how we can really identify what this person's going to be doing. There's so many facets to agriculture, you know, with business, but we're looking at specific sectors, you know, maybe around composting, agribusiness, biodiversity, waste. So it's still evolving, and we should have someone in that position over the next 2 months.
Who was the sponsor of the resolution to create this?
Kathy.
Was it Kathy? I want to make sure that Kathy then is in touch with you, because we've had in the past a little bit of a disconnect between legislative intent and then when it actually happens on the ground, and I want to make sure that doesn't happen here. So I'm going to connect you two so she can tell you exactly what the intent was when we put this together, so it's totally clear. And okay, great. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I just had a question. Are you able to disclose to us how many applicants have applied for the position and how many you've interviewed?
We haven't interviewed anyone to date, but we have 6 resumes that we are reviewing, and I know there were a few that were rejected. I don't know the number.
My, you know, just as a follow-up to that, in regards to, is it your feeling, and you know, I don't know if you can speak for the, you know, for the executive's team, but is it your belief that this position was, the salary was funded at an appropriate level to attract the talent that we're looking for?
Yeah.
Okay.
From the 6 resumes that I have surveilled, it's quite impressive. So we are clearly, you know, meeting the expectations in terms of wage compensation.
That's a good question. Any other questions about that program?
And while we have you, do you want to say anything on the on Main Street's program?
Probably not.
Okay.
There's still some things we're working through. Mm-hmm.
And that's one that I sponsored, so I want to actually meet with you and talk a little bit more about that.
And we'll definitely follow up with you.
Perfect. Great.
So I'm going to go to the land bank, which I think also has some questions that are being sorted out. And I think I'm going to leave it there unless anybody has any questions or wants to say.
You know, I've been following this closely, and there's still no set decisions on this in terms, and counties are handling it differently.
Is this all going back to Hennepin?
Correct, the Hennepin decision. So I think we're in a little bit of a watch and wait with this for the moment, and I don't think there's much. Do you have any other updates on it? So I think that's where we're at.
Actually, I have a question on that. Like, how long should we wait until we decide what to do with that money?
It's a really good question.
Yeah, I don't think we should be waiting around for the state to come back. we should probably.
I think I had kind of put in the idea of end of the year. I thought, you know, if we hadn't gotten a response by December, I think going into next year, I think it's time to move on if we don't hear anything by December.
I'll take this back to the chair and to the executive. That's kind of where it's.
Well, no, the chair. I mean, it's the chair's her recommendation, right? Yes. And she's going to be leading the legislature, and so I think we should give her the benefit of the doubt until the end of her term.
Right.
But after that, I think it's
moving on.
Yes, legislature.
How much did you set aside for that?
$1 million.
$1 million.
Yep.
Thanks for mentioning that.
Amanda had her hand up. governor hasn't signed the codes on her desk.
Correct.
However, there's some thought that that might happen towards the winter.
Okay.
That there would be some kind of further, at least at the state level.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll just keep keep it in a holding pattern. I'll keep having conversations with the executive and with the chair and let them know that we're anxious to resolve this.
So it brings us to respite houses.
Jolene can give us an update on this.
That would be great. I was
going
to. Sure thing. So I'll give you a little bit of history. Back in March, we put an FOQ for a crisis respite, which originally our plan was in hope to have two to three crisis respites. The FOQ came back and came in around 835,000 from People USA to start one. The other provider was Gateway. We felt People USA, because they run crisis respites, they're the best organization to move forward with this project. As we were in conversations, they started to look at property. There was one that was 6 bedrooms that was out in Ellenville, which is ideally where, obviously, this crisis respite would be. That location was lost. So there was no location to move forward with as far as contracting. The concerns that have come up for DMH is that there isn't a lot of properties out there that are going to be 6 to 8 bedrooms. And if you look at the sustainability rates for this type of program and the rates that this state will reimburse you for, you need at least 6 to 8 bedrooms to sustain that long term. And obviously this ARPA funding is a one-time thing. So we were really trying to look at alternative options. We did look at, before I started, there was locations looked at that weren't feasible because they were going to cost high renovation. We went back and talked to People USA. They're not comfortable moving forward with getting a property until they're in contract for the funding. But the concern then there is the inventory for the property is kind of a risk to be taking and looking into. The other piece of that is the site needs to fall under Padavan law to be protected. So it's meant to be a residential house. So it's going to be in the community. So if you put a house in a community that's serving people in this population, it might then become an issue that the community says, I don't want this in my back door. So that's a barrier that we've also been kind of considering. That's why the location on Ellenville was really great, because it was already a provider. So we've been kind of going back and forth and having discussions of what the best way to move forward with this project is. And we were kind of playing around with numbers to see if a 4-bedroom would even be feasible for sustainability. We don't believe that it would. That being said, the original proposal for 8 bedrooms that came in March was, like I said, around $835,000. The second proposal for the 6-bedroom house in Ellenville actually came in around $1.1. So the cost of investing in the property is going to be something that's going to have to be considered. We do have one option that we will be looking at on Golden Hill that we talked about. I got more information today.
Okay.
The county-owned property to see if it's feasible to create enough bedrooms to make it sustaining. If that doesn't work out, I think that we are looking to see what the best route to take as far as having a crisis respite, especially if it's not going to meet the original policy that was 4 to 2 to 3. The other thing that we were looking at is there is a crisis respite run by People USA right now in Orange County, and it does serve Ulster County residents. So currently it's a 5-bedroom house. All of their other crisis residents are provisionally licensed, which means that once they do construction, they bring up the ADA accessibility, they do all these things that OMH wants, they'll be able to then bill for this program. But they're actually increasing that 5-bedroom house to 8 bedrooms in the near future. When there was a tour done recently about that specific site that uses Ulster residents, it was shared with us that the house is extremely underutilized by Ulster County. So then we started to really kind of look at, if we have a site that's underutilized, that's actually going to be increasing their beds and offering transportation to the facility, do we then want to invest money in another site that we're a little bit iffy about sustainability long term? That's kind of where we're at now. So we will move forward with viewing the Hutton property to see, Hutton and building on Golden Hill, to see if it's doable. But if not, we might want to come back to the table and have different conversations about what's the need for the community and what makes the most sense, because the licensing process through OMH can take some time. So you can gauge, okay, in 6 months I'd like to be licensed and bringing people into the house, but there's no promise that that's the case. This money is only spent for a certain period of time. I understand it needs to be spent by 2026. The other thing that we really look at when we're kind of looking at the sustainability is what's the capacity for filling. So even if you have six bedrooms, let's say they're filled five bedrooms out of six every day of the year. It depends on who has Medicaid for what you're going to get filled for. So you might be serving Ulster County residents without Medicaid, which means you're not bringing in anything to pay for that bed. So you have to anticipate there's a gap between serving individuals and not getting paid for them, which is why that sweet spot is the eight bedrooms. When you kind of go less than eight bedrooms, you're taking on a risk of providing services that you're then not billing for, then your staff and all of the things that come along with that property and paying that mortgage can be a concern. So that's kind of the big picture of everything that we've been looking into since I started.
Just one last thing to add, the other road houses, the similar, the ones that are were considered as a model for these in the other counties, they're actually funded with state pass-through money, but that was specifically allocated at a point in time several years ago. It's not money that's available to us that we can allocate.
Right.
So just to give everybody an idea of how these exist in other counties and why, you know, we haven't, why we're trying to troubleshoot this gap, because there's a funding source that isn't available to us.
Why isn't it available to us?
It was like just part of an allocation that was made, and
sorry, so when Hudson River closed down, Hudson River Psych Center, there was money invested into different counties to be able to capture these folks that were released, and some of the surrounding counties decided to use these funds to support a crisis respite. Those funds can't sustain that. They're very low, and it really only staffs for, like, let's say, per diem staff. You're not paying your staff fringe benefits. You're not really having full-time staff. The staffing pattern that you would need to run a 24/7 license, now that they're being licensed, crisis respite, is nowhere near what the funding would be for the counties that are already providing it anyway. Mm-hmm. So the hopes are that OMH would pay for certain things to bring a house up to safety code, but it doesn't give a lot of money for the reservations that actually need it. And then also the funding will still be there through some of the counties that they're already funded. They might not pull that back right away because they will need that to get up and running.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an idea by year three it could be sustainable. But that's also if you reach the capacity of having people in these sites and you have a need, which is for underutilizing another house, to keep that house at a certain capacity to bring in sustainability funds, that could be a risk.
I think the other factor is that we will now have a crisis stabilization center, which I think could actually take some of the pressure off the need for 100%. Respite houses.
Right.
So that's another thing to factor in.
Yeah, and I can speak just through my personal experience operating the stabilization center in Dutchess. People come in every day if they feel in crisis. You know, it's really trying to change someone's thought process that when they're in crisis, they might not necessarily need to go to the hospital. It will save them money. They can come to the stabilization center. It might be a couple hours of support, and then they go back into the community, but they know that it's there. So a lot of people that are used to utilizing the emergency room because that's what they know, if they have another place to go to, they will start to utilize that. And that doesn't mean that they can't go back to wherever their home environment is and come back if they're in need. You know, they have to accept them regardless, 24/7 hours out of the day. And you do have people that come in and just rest and then they leave, and they just want to know that the security is there of a service being provided.
Mm-hmm. And what's the max for one of these respite houses?
I believe it's 16. Mm-hmm. It's between 12 and 16. The minimum is 3, because it's
obviously,
you know, you're never going to sustain it off of
right.
3.
So
for a 4-bedroom, which is really what's obviously inventory-wise in the community at a very inflated rate, is the only thing that's available at this point. You know, I started to try to do some research in Ellenville because really we want to keep this if we are to do it in that location. And there was one house, I think, on Zillow that was, I think it was 6 bedrooms, and it was dilapidated, and it was $400,000. And the amount of work that would have to be put into it, plus the cost of purchasing on there, and would be very quite high.
So clearly this is something we're going to have to really think about. You know, if we could get more information about this potential house on Golden Hill, that would be great. Whenever you have it, send it to us. And
we'll see it on Monday.
Okay.
So as far as I know, it might have been gutted, but it's 2 floors and a basement. I don't know if that's for sure. No one can really tell me. I only found out more about it today. So we'll find out more about that, and at least we've exhausted all of our resources and see that we've done our due diligence and see what we can make work.
Great. Thank you. Other questions from committee members? Anybody else? Okay. Thank you very much.
So there's one other project to mention, solar, which is the solar and EV charging. It's with our division currently. We haven't been able to do too much, except we have reached out to the Department of Environment, and we're hoping to get to that in the new year. I don't know if there's any questions on that, so I do want to pause.
We had a little help offered from the executive's office, right? Solar with the contracts and letters of intent.
Yeah, so our aim is to, at least within the time period between hopefully now and January, maybe January 1, get out a letter of intent, maybe even sooner. But we want to kind of pull the, or at least be in communication through like a formal letter about the soliciting an interest from municipalities, so we have some better idea of like what type of response we're going to get before we put in all the work of doing the application, which,
I think this is a good moment to segue into the broader conversation about ARPA and the ARPA committee, because as you can see, there's some projects that are completed, not that many, but some are totally completed, a lot in progress, and a few that are really, there's not a lot of movement so far on them. So I think we have to make a decision about, is this committee going to continue on for next session, for next year, or are we going to try and figure out some other way to divvy up these projects? I've been talking a little bit with the ARP team and talked a little bit with Amber about how we could potentially divide up projects by connected to the resolution with certain committees, and really having those committees be the driver for each of these projects, you know. So, for example, solar would go towards energy and environment, and, you know, we'd sort of break it up and make it more of a committee oversight to be hearing the updates and trying to move things along. Or we could just reconstitute ARPA and have ARPA continue to do that. So, my biggest concern is that we actually assign the monies before the end of this year. That, to me, is the biggest concern. And then the other ones are land bank, you know, what's going to happen with that land bank money, and respite house. If that doesn't happen, how are the decisions going to be made? Is that money going to stay committed to mental health, or is it going to go back into sort of a general pot for, like, rethinking again, or how is that going to work? So to me, that's ARPA committee work, you know, so how will that get done if we don't have a committee? So I'd love to hear committee members' thoughts on what do we do about this for next year.
I think obviously it's like the will of the new chair, whomever that may be, and also, I mean, I feel like if all of the money is kind of accounted for, and then it's just following up on like progress of the project, then I don't think I don't think we need to do a monthly meeting, but perhaps a quarterly meeting, just to kind of track it that way. So maybe it's not a committee, but like a special
task force or something, or whatever
we
call it.
ARPA task force.
Yeah.
And I would like to have a special parking permit for that.
I'll look into that legislator. It's very interesting.
Yeah, but I think you're right. I mean, the allocation of the money is probably the most important thing before we hand it all off to the committees. And at that point, I think the committees individually can handle it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're still talking $2-3 million potentially that hasn't been allocated or even put somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to split those two feelings, I think, as Legislator Corcoran said, the money, I think this committee needs to stay constituted until the money, until we allocate the money that we've been, mm-hmm. that we've been delegated.
Mm-hmm.
and we figure out how we want to allocate it and make sure that it's allocated to those proposals.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I think we can look at potentially changing the structure of it to potentially meeting at a more infrequent basis.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see at this point in January, I don't see any benefit to disbanding this committee in January.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's premature.
Okay.
And I think that we have important work to continue to do until we know where this money is going to be going and we have the updates that it's that it's in progress.
Okay. Thank you. My understanding is that we have actually allocated all the monies except for $150,000. I don't have my tracker in front of me, but around $150,000. Everything else has been allocated. It just hasn't been
obligated.
Exactly. Thank you. So we still have money left in sewer and water. We still have money left in parks. And the land bank money is a question. Respite house money now is going to be a question. The 150 we have to actually allocate for something, and I have a suggestion for that, which I'm going to bring forth tonight. So I think I think we actually have almost all of it allocated. I think it's more about making the decisions of, is that sewer and water money actually going to go to sewer and water project? Is that parks money actually going to go to the parks projects or not? So I think those are the decisions we need to make, is are we going to stick to our allocations more than needing to allocate? So, yeah. So, you know what, let's jump out of order for a moment if we can. And anybody mind if we jump out of order since we're talking about this? Let's look at the survey. So, thank you for all doing the survey. Legislator Hewitt, you didn't see this, but we've been talking about 11 projects that have been sort of hanging out there for several months. And so Amber sent out a survey to all the committee members to ask them to prioritize their desire for where this leftover money would go. And so you can see the results of that survey here. It puts workforce development at the top, specifically nursing or EMT programs or something related to that. Food securities in second, which specifically related to commissary kitchens, our idea of commissary kitchens, and third as broadband. And then you can see projects that fell underneath that. So the one thought I had was, which is in our top three, was the broadband proposal that Director Doyle brought to us last month, which is basically like shovel ready. I mean, there's no shovels involved probably with this, but it's pretty much a shovel ready project, right? It's already in the budget for this year, the phase one of the broadband project, that we can basically just apply ARPA funds to that, and it's somewhere around the $150,000 ticket. Is that right?
We were proposing to ask for $100,000 to essentially establish Wi-Fi hotspots. We've been working with the controller, emergency services, emergency management, and in discussions with Nate from ARPA, with the idea that we would be able to essentially do a small grant program for emergency hotspots and general hotspots. And the thought being is that these would be at town halls, they would be in main streets, they would be at libraries that currently don't have hotspots, and the grants would be small, between $1,000 to $7,000, to essentially stand those materials up and make sure those Wi-Fi areas would be available. I think as I told the Capitol Committee the other night was, I think better when I copy somebody else's ideas, and so I did. Dutchess County has rolled this out. They have a similar program. We talked to Dutchess County. They have been moderately successful so far with respect to that, and we do have the first support of the Digital Commission, that the Broadband Digital Commission that March has been working with, County Control has been working with, So I think it would make sense. I don't want to call it shovel ready because there are a number of contracts out there, and Nate and I were having some conversations today. If you recall how we did the food security program, we actually had a single contract with Community Foundations, and Community Foundations is the contract. That's the type of thing, so that we don't have, you know, 20 or 30 different contracts out there with various areas. We haven't had that conversation with Community Foundations yet, but I think that that would, I think that they would be receptive to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would see how much, we would see how far we could go on that. But I think, from my perspective as a planner, I think it's just something that we can do in broadband that hasn't been done and that's not funded elsewhere within the broadband spectrum of things mm-hmm. that is currently being funded through the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act.
I think it also aligns very well with the ARPA guidelines. I mean, it's serving underserved communities. It clearly it's like a direct like a support for folks who have been disenfranchised in terms of not being able to get to have access to it and travel and all that. And you know, I just think it would make a lot of sense. And we've had heard this conversation over and over again about some of our farther afield places not having, you know, access. So just let's start looking.
Yes, actually, so in piggybacking on the chair's statement there, Planner Doyle, so your anticipation would be to at least have one location in every municipality that we would be able to provide for this?
Certainly, my sense would be is that there should be, I hesitate to say one location in every municipality because I'm thinking of Denning and Hardenberg.
That's where I was thinking.
Yeah. So, but yes, the short answer would be yes. Recognizing the fact that we would want to serve locations that have generators and things of that nature so that if there is an emergency, at a point of fact, the Wi-Fi would actually work even though it may not because of the fiber being down. And we'd look to try to connect with fiber rather than connect with coax.
Yeah.
A lot of libraries are fiber interconnected. They have their own backbone fiber, so that would be the other reason.
But you don't see any geographic hindrances for any particular part of the county that we wouldn't be able to service because
no,
of
and I think
challenging terrain.
You know, I think that the short answer is no. But I also think that we know where we have substantial issues. Think of these as areas where we have ice distribution during emergencies, and shelter areas. So you start to think that you build around other emergency locations to make sure that you can service those locations.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that the first responders are adamant not to use fire stations, for they don't want to mix people in their parking lot with those, and so we would respect that.
That makes sense. So I guess to the committee, I'd want to suggest that we take that last bit of unallocated money, and if it's the will of the committee, actually commit it to this program, and I'll work with Director Doyle to get a resolution to that effect by next month, and then that would mean that everything's allocated at this point. So what do you think about that?
I don't have my tracker sheet up in front, but it's about $150,000 or so that's unallocated.
It's like $130,000.
Yeah.
Okay. And if the planner is asking for about $100,000, so we might still have about $30,000.
You can ask for more.
I was just
thinking, why don't we ask for money?
Well, I was thinking just to make it easy. Why don't we just make it that last bit of money? Make that equal the program. And if ultimately all that money doesn't get spent on it, then it can actually go to fund balance. It can be used against loss or something like that. You know? But I'd say just to make it easy at this point, we just say, because we don't want to parse out like, and then we've got $10,000 here.
Well, I mean, and we might still be deciding to reallocate funding if we end up punting on a few of these other projects. So.
Exactly. All right. Do we need to vote on this, or okay?
Not at this
point. So what I'll do is I'll just come up with a resolution for next month, and we'll.
It's a commitment, right?
It's a commitment. It's a commitment. So we'll commit to that broadband, and then what I think we should do is I think we should kind of create a plan B, and in the plan B we use the other two top projects that we're talking about, and you know, think about if the land back money doesn't happen, you know, what would we do with that in terms of either the workforce development programming or the food securities, and then also if the monies don't get used for parks or and it doesn't get used for water and sewer. I think also what's going to come up tonight is this Resolution 599 to talk about the small businesses that did not get funded, so we'll have to think about, we can talk about that in a second, but that's something also that's going to be in the mix of, is that going to be ARPA funds or is that not going to be ARPA funds, so, alright, so I'm going to move us along a little bit now, right, so, in terms of the financial tracker, there's no new updates for right now. I know the ARP division is working on making journal entries and trying to get us up to date. You want to
provide an update on all
that? Oh, perfect, great.
Yeah, and just to make a mention, I did go through all these numbers. Before this meeting, I wasn't able to provide it in the committee report, but I have my own spreadsheet as far as checking the numbers and maybe, and so actually I think this is, there's a lot of earmarks in this that aren't necessarily within Department of Finance budgeted items, but I think the committee knows about that. And
I'm not sure I know what you're talking about right
so,
now.
So no problem. As far as purchase orders and journals,
okay,
we have absolutely we have largely completed all the purchase orders. There are a few such as Golden Hill that have been expended. So we're in that case, because the funds are already expended, we're not making a purchase order.
Okay.
But we have caught up with all of the purchase orders we can.
Okay.
And we actually were able to do that very quickly. So that was done quite quickly after the last meeting. For journals, there's been a little bit more of a process. We have started entering journals, and I believe many of them have gone all the way through the approval process. There was like three different categories of journals. One was for payroll based on the backup that needed to be provided. We have caught up on the payroll journals to August. And so there was a gap from February to August, but we brought that up. Through 2023, we have also, I believe, entered all journals. And I think we're very close to approval on the operating. So obviously we have some projects that are in operating, and we have some projects that are in capital. And so we saw those as two other categories. And next we handled the operating journals, and we have entered those now.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they're approved up to September. And then we are working on our last.
Okay.
For operating, it was longer. It was September, I think. Was it?
Okay. And the goal is money encumbered, right? That's the goal.
Yeah.
So as we can show, is that the technical term encumbered, right, at this point that we want to show is?
Purchase orders.
The same thing.
Right.
We encumber through the purchase order process.
Right.
Yep, so encumbrance.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's really, for the journal process, I'm very happy to bring it up to date because it's claiming our revenue.
Great.
So if the, you know, as far as what we've expended, we are then entering the journal so that all the different, we have a temporary revenue account, and then it goes to the revenue account, so it's fully claimed. We've done what we said we were going to do for the ARPA funds and the federal guidelines,
mm-hmm.
and that money has been, you know, we've gone through the whole process on
Got
that
it.
Money. With
okay.
The so that's really our goal with the journal.
Well, as you get that work done, if you could just keep connected with Amber, who mm-hmm. can then update information and get it out to the committee so that we can...
Yeah, and we have a U.S. Treasury report, which is due at the end of the month, and there is a resolution that I believe goes back 2 years or more, where all the U.S. Treasury reports, which we also put on our website, on the ARP Division website portion of the Ulster County, those all get uploaded, but they also get provided to the clerk of the legislature, along with, I believe, there is a requirement for journals. So
okay.
We're looking to do that.
All right. Great.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. I'm going to move us to resolutions. Could I get a motion to discuss Resolution 559?
Motion.
And a second?
Second.
Okay, great. So this is the resolution. Legislator Levine? Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for being here. Appreciate it. Legislator Hewitt, did you want to speak to this?
Yes, thank
you. Okay. Thank you.
I was planning to introduce a resolution that's very similar. As I spoke to Amber yesterday, she let me know about this resolution. I was speaking to Legislator Roberts about our intent as the committee that was rating the grants. And I think the three of us the whole time were thinking about low to moderate income businesses. Our legislative intent was clear throughout the process. And when we saw that attachments were on, I mean, each application was about 20 pages long, and there was a section with personal income statements and business income statements. When John Guevara asked why we don't have access to those, we were told by the Economic Development Department, we already took care of that. And so that's when the mistake happened that we all know happened, and we had to pay up for that mistake last month. And we paid a lot of money for that mistake. So the 17 businesses that didn't get their money got screwed on that mistake. So I think this is a great resolution. I'm supportive of it. I know Legislator Guevara and Roberts are both supportive of making right by these businesses. And I liked reading this resolution. I'm just not sure if I agree with where the money will come from. So my first question is, was there a second round of requests for the parks funding?
There was a second round of requests for parks, and we had considered a third round, but that was basically in a holding pattern. But we did do two hearty rounds of asks for that parks money.
Because you may remember that the legislative intent on that parks funding was also misconstrued.
Mm-hmm.
When Legislator Stewart and I wrote the resolution, the intent was to get edibles in our parks, to have land around here that have berries, nuts, fruit, and none of that was in the RFP. Nothing about creating parks that are different or supporting a different future around edible resilience.
Right.
So could it be possible to rewrite it with the remaining money to try and change what we're looking for?
I think that's interesting, and you know, the problem that came up with that was something that I've discussed a bunch of times now about legislative intent getting all the way through to contract, and we have to make sure that we're more diligent about that, because it can easily just get, it's a big process that happens with contracts, as we all know, or some of us don't actually know, and so I did a lot more digging into like what goes in the whole process, and it goes through insurance, and it goes through this, and it goes, so there's a lot of hands that see those contracts, and so I think that we just need to, as legislators, however it is, make sure that our intent goes all the way to the through line of that contract and that RFP that goes out there. So I don't see why we couldn't revisit that contract. Didn't we do one amendment to that contract already? The parks contract. When we sent it out the second time, there were some things that were actually amended, weren't there?
Forgive me, the parks contract, are we talking about the 17 contract, the two from last?
Correct.
There were no amendments to any of the resolutions, like there was...
No, to the call for bid.
To the call for bid, yeah.
That's correct,
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Okay. There was
removed garbage or something like that?
Yeah, there was a couple things that we saw, and we were like, that's just not what our intent was. So we actually revised it when the second call went out, and... So I don't think it actually revised the contract itself, but I think it just revised the RFP, right?
Or the
bid.
Yeah, the call for
the call for
yeah.
bid, right.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Yeah, it's probably the application document.
Yeah.
I don't want to cast any blame. The process moved so quickly that I thought Eric and I would be involved in steering the process.
Right.
I worked on a 34-acre project in the town of Rochester called the Watershed Nature Trail. And we planted nut trees already. There are raspberries and blueberries and a whole trail that the town of Rochester was able to get funding to create a trail. It goes next to the Millbrook, so there's watershed education involved. I have two different PowerPoints that I could share with you just to show what Eric and I were thinking about, like, what kind of parks we can get people to walk through in our area.
So how much money is left in that now? Is it 400,000 still?
Over 400,000.
Over 400,000. So almost $500,000. So I think as a committee, we have to decide, are we sticking with that as our intent for those monies, and if so, are we going to give it a third round that gets a revision? And I'm fine with that. I think that it's important to stick with our intent as much as possible with the buckets of money that we allocated. And so, if we want to do a third round, I'm supportive of that.
Thoughts? Let's back up for Thursday a little bit. We were talking about the CARES 2 funding, but then it's talking about taking it from the parks funding, which I think could be spent on parks. So I'm supportive of the CARES 2 funding for the businesses that should have gotten it, but I don't know where the money comes from yet in that support.
Yep.
So
we're talking about two things, basically. Yeah. So what we're talking about is should the parks money go for a third round, and if so, Legislator Hewitt, would you look at the bid and see if it can be changed to be more in line with your original legislative intent before it goes out? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question I would just have in regards to that would be, if somebody can just refresh my memory in regards to, are we putting the same restrictions on that for round three as we put in for the water sewer in terms of no double dipping for municipalities?
Yeah, we'd have to talk about that because that was part of the water and sewer. So unless this takes a significant, unless it becomes a significantly different bid, like if all of a sudden it becomes about edibles, you know, that's a very different conversation than creating a slip and slide or whatever, you know.
What if we were also to kind of lean into the Think Differently accessibility for round three?
Yeah, that's cool.
That's interesting.
Park access?
Whatever. Accessible playground.
Mm-hmm. I also think there was a little confusion in the language about the match, and it may have made it difficult to apply for. There was interesting math. I don't forget the math right now. But you have to match 25% of your 50% match. Something weird like that.
Right.
So, and one thing Chan Bartel mentioned is that these municipalities should have skin in the game, so in-kind shouldn't count. But I think the biggest skin in the game is in-kind. When the community members are out making trails or carpenters are donating their time, I think we should count in kind.
We had an issue with in-kind. I think it was an ARPA issue, counting in-kind as a contribution for a match contribution. Because we talked about this.
Yeah.
You know what it was? It was
25% for the match.
We added in-kind.
Right.
Because what we did was we came up with that rubric, whatever, that said, like, you know, how to calculate what in-kind would be valued at, because there was some sort
right.
of, remember we did that whole process?
Yeah, we decided to go for the grant because we needed, and we did look within the county for different models, because there was some suggestion on where to look from the legislature, but we finally settled on, because it's so established and everybody knows it, the prevailing wage rates.
Got it. All right, so I guess as a committee, my question would be, are we committed to keeping the parks money in the parks and just refiguring out how to do a third round?
Well, I guess the real question is also going to be is, do we allow parties that went to contract? How many contracts are we going to for parks?
17,
right? Mm-hmm. Are those 17 allowed to come back in?
Right.
Since it's so different now.
Right.
I mean, that's the first thing we've got to decide.
Sure.
Only have 20 towns or 3 villages.
Exactly.
You don't have a place to go if you don't allow double dipping. Right?
Yeah.
That's the thing I would say.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we have to.
So I guess what I would ask you, Legislator Hewitt, is if you could take a look at round one language, round two language, and then see how you would adapt that for a round three and bring that back to the committee. And if it comes back and it's significantly different, then we can go back out and we can just go back out to all the municipalities and say, we have a round three now, we've changed the intention, you know, and anybody that was looking for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could change the entire focus, just basically make the focus about creating organic spaces in terms of what Legislator Stewart
totally.
Talked about, and that would, I think most of the stuff that you got was essentially maintenance stuff. It was fixing what you had.
Yep.
You created a lot of new spaces when you went up to your park grant. My sense is,
yeah.
in all due respect, I think we need to focus on creating new spaces, and Legislator Stewart's proposal, which essentially is what kind of spaces do we want to create,
mm-hmm.
is essentially different than, you know, fixing a slide or fixing a bathroom or something like
right.
that.
Yeah. Right.
I was surprised. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
No, just do we just create a new resolution to come get the money? I mean, you know, because this is kind of done.
Mm-hmm.
We have a quandary here on 559, and how do we fund that if we take the money away?
Mm-hmm.
Do we take the money away, fund 559, and come back with a new resolution that's specific to what you're asking for, and then put that back out to everybody again, and now we're not in the third round. We're starting over. If the money's going to be there, let's get real. It's going to be there.
I hear what you're saying. I feel like we would have less barriers if we just kept it kind of in-house here and just basically... Because we've already been talking about doing a third round with parks. We're going to come to a decision point. I think if we just, basically, we've already done an adaptation of the first round of bids. We can just do another adaptation and shift the focus. Why do you think it would be to our advantage to actually...
What are we doing with 559 now?
Well, let's talk about 559.
Okay.
Because I'm not in agreement to take the money from parks in 559 personally.
Okay.
I suggested that should come from fund balance. I don't think it should be ARPA money at this point.
That 559 should be fund balance?
Correct. Mm-hmm. I think if it's going to happen, it should come out of fund balance and should not be. I think as ARPA, we funded what we had intended to fund,
mm-hmm.
and the mistakes were made on the executive side. They were mm-hmm. not made on the legislative intent mm-hmm. side, and I think that the money should come, I mean, it's all coming from all of us,
yeah.
but you know what I mean? I think that it should be a fund balance situation rather than a mm-hmm. ARPA fund.
That's a good idea.
I don't disagree.
I agree.
How does the executive side feel about that?
Planting our flag.
I just want to think about the idea of how you're going to do that relative to the clause that's there.
So, if I may, also this resolution doesn't make any mention of any organization that would actually
correct
do
that.
The
I was going to bring that up.
of
yep.
Then subrecipients.
Correct.
And just to remind folks that you see that still in the process of reviewing financials, reviewing books. We're still in the middle of a CARES 1 audit with
yep.
the county
yep.
comptroller.
Yep.
The county comptroller has also stated that UCDAS, an organization, is not in a position to additionally administer the grant program.
Yep.
And there is currently, the UCDAS board just issued an RFP for financial and consulting services to look at both the organization, its internal controls, etc. However, that will be going through the new year,
mm-hmm.
For sure. We'll be hopefully under
yeah.
contract within the next month and at December.
Yep.
But that will take some time.
Yep.
So if there's some thought about another community financial, community development financial institution, a CDFI,
right.
that would be an appropriate way to administer that fund, that would take some time to identify another partner.
Right.
So for those reasons, we...
I agree. Yes.
Great point. Is Community Foundations of the Hudson Valley mm-hmm. equipped?
CDFI.
Yeah. Do we need development finance?
I think we pitched this. Did we pitch this to them and they declined?
Probably.
I think they did. We pitched something to them and they declined it. I think it was this. I'll have to go back and I'll have to look at my notes.
Did we also speculate on IDA?
Yeah, we looked at IDA. We also...
But is this for parks?
No. We're now talking about the
no,
this is CARES.
The CARES, yeah. So if we were going to fund this with fund balance, we would have to do this through a budget amendment, correct?
It's a budget amendment no matter what.
It's a budget amendment no matter what.
So and just to reiterate what we discussed earlier, it might not equal the 17 times 35 because some of them applies to 5,000.
Right.
So we'd have to get the actual math.
And the work that would need to be done, go ahead, I'll let you talk about that. Well, we had had this conversation that there's more work that needs to be done in terms of it's not just the list and 17 people, they get the money. It's looking at who didn't get funded, are their financials in line with what we need, do we need more information from them. It's basically a whole new project that has to be taken on. But, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
Some sensitivity to whether or not these projects are still valid, what they proposed. The program was using 2021 AMI for the region, which has changed significantly. So there's fundamental questions more than any sort of list.
Question, so then on round three, are there going to be different restrictions? Is it going to strictly go to your initial intent of planting the trees and they can't come back and now come back for the thing differently to ADA playground? Will that cut that out?
We're talking about two totally different things at the same time here. So what we're now talking about is we're now talking about the small business grants.
Right, but then the funding of the small business grants is now in question.
Right.
So I'm saying, because I'm not totally against taking the park money and giving it to 529.
Okay, got it.
So I want to know, is the amendment for round three going to be more specific to just the original intent of planting trees?
Okay.
And not being able to be used for the think differently for the ADA playgrounds and other things
that are going
to be available to the 17 contractual municipalities already.
Right.
Sorry, I just want to throw in one thing on the ADA. There was language in our application for making things more accessible, and we have received a number of applications that are going to have ADA as part of the program.
All right. I feel like I have to separate these two trains that are going here. So what I'd like to do is, so first of all, I think we have to postpone this for the moment. I think we can't make a decision on this evening. So I'm going to ask that we postpone this.
It's been a good discussion.
Good discussion. But what I think I'd like to do is get information. So the information that I think we need is we need to see the two first bids for the parks. If we could get those, and Legislator Hewitt, if you could really look at those, look at the original legislative intent, and come back with an adapted bid that would then change it up. We can come back to this as a committee and say, do we feel good about this? Should we go out for a round three on parks, right? Second thing, I will have a conversation with the executive about continuing to fund these CARES that we didn't fund, but do it through fund balance and just get her temperature on that.
Or if we're going to take the money out of parks to do as this resolution suggests, who would be the entity?
Correct.
And it just, it would require any subrecipient agreement would require board approval. This is not just a decision of the legislature.
Correct.
If it were intended to use CDA.
Right.
So there would need to be additional identification of organizations.
Thank you. I think my basic problem with 559 is a resolution from outside of this committee pulling money from something that we intended to something else. That I don't agree with. I think if we made that internal decision, which we've been talking about, we're going to get to a point where we're going to say, okay, we're done with the parks, we're going to move that money and we're going to put it into a different bucket or something. This is forcing our hand to do that. And personally, I don't think that that's right, because we've been talking about a process and I think we should stick with our process of doing that. So that's my biggest problem that I have with this. I don't know if I necessarily have a problem with the intent of this resolution, but it's where the funding is coming from is the problem for me. So I think that's one of the things that I want to feel better about if this moves forward. All right. So what I think I'm going to do we have more discussion on this, or should we move on? All right, I'm going to call. Yes, sir.
Just once, I very much agree with Legislative Court Green. I never thought I would say, let's not use the parks funding for parks, but you're right about new funding coming down in the future. So an intent like having more resilient parks, more edibles in the region, could be a long-term vision.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't just have to be based on this.
Mm-hmm.
So if it makes it more convenient to shift the parks funding to take care of the CARES 2 people that I think we owe money to, for administration purposes, then I'd be in favor of moving that parks funding. Especially because three of the legislators who've been working on the parks, public spaces, and recreation department document are in the room. Legislators Berry, Legislator Green, and I have a document that I just shared with Dennis. I talked to you about it last week.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about having a parks department would help us have a better vision for the future of what our public spaces do, where parks are missing. There's many documents or studies that say that Southern Ulster should have a big park to bring people down that way. And so I started sharing it yesterday and today with all the legislators, so I'll get it to you, Aaron, and Tom, probably tomorrow. And I just sent it to you, Dennis, to start thinking about what could a parks department do for us as far as not only edible resilience, but the watershed education. Having matching signs about fox or blueberries around the whole county, everywhere you go, the education can match.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm flexible at this time.
Okay, great. Well, I'm going to suggest that we postpone 559. Can somebody make that motion?
Motion.
And
a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That'll be postponed for 1 month. All right. Thank you for that good discussion there.
Thank you, Amanda.
Could I have a motion to discuss 560?
Motion.
Second.
All righty. So this is the recording of lost revenue for ARPA. And so I just want to give you my general thoughts on this because I've thought a lot about it. I don't think that this is a bad idea. I just don't think this is the time for it. I think this is good for us to have in our back pocket for next September or October or November when the fire is right there and like, okay, you haven't, you know, allocated this money at this point. Okay, great. We've got a tool to then basically like make sure that this money doesn't go away. So I'm not sure what I spoke to the author of the resolution, and he had a lot of concern about workload on the ARP team and how that this resolution would relax the workload for your team. But I'm not quite sure how that works, because you're going to have to do it anyway, whether it's in fund balance and it's a project or whether it's not in fund balance and it's a project.
I mean, the way I read this is that the money would go essentially into government service, and I think just be used for government service. So I think that's where I'm just trying to understand the point, and I think that's where the point is on that.
Yeah.
But it's still ARPA money that we have to account for as ARPA money, correct?
Well, no.
For you? No.
No, because once it would get calculated as lost revenue, that's what it's calculating.
Oh,
that's the ARPA purpose. Okay. It's lost revenue.
Right.
And then it basically becomes, and there's nothing in that resolution that says that amount of money would then be sacred for ARPA projects. It doesn't say that at all.
Well, we would still need to report on it. So it's not like we can just be like, this amount of money is lost revenue, like this amount of money is being used for payroll, this amount of money is being used for...
Correct.
So
right, but it could be one big report like that, like payroll.
Right.
You know, that could basically take care of it.
Yeah.
You know, you could backdate payroll to whenever and say, you know, this is how we're saying we're calculating this loss against it. So it could be a once and done, and then the money basically just goes into fund balance, right? And then to me, that's where the problem is that it becomes part of this sea of fund balance and it loses all its ARPA intention. Director Doyle.
So this is, to me, this is the kind of strategic discussion that gets done outside of resolutions. Mm. I think resolutions sort of complicate the process.
Mm.
And then once the strategic discussion comes to a conclusion, you write the resolution around the strategic discussions. Nate and I have been talking back and forth with respect to how do you essentially deal with a lost revenue so that a couple things happen. One is you've spent it, right? So that essentially it, and two is, now that you've spent it, is there a way, for example, if you save money on A, thinking about payroll, right, what happens to that money as it relates to the ARPA work that's ongoing that you may not or may want to finish?
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about this strategically, remember what we were talking about. One is the idea that you have allocations. Two is the idea that you have essentially obligation. And the last thing you have to do is expenditures.
Right.
Right. And looking at all of that, the idea is to try to think about a way, and this is my opinion, thinking about this holistically, trying to think about a way that you remove all of those ARPA restrictions by spending the money somewhere else and by keeping the money still available for those projects that are essentially going through the project. So you're removing all of those restrictions. You're essentially saying, you used to have an ARPA grant, you now have a county grant, right? And the county has used your ARPA money to essentially move things through a payroll system or pick a large expenditures that the county can make it on. And that way, all of those restrictions come off. Thinking about this even further, how does that look from a legislative resolution standpoint? Remember what we just did with Housing Action Fund,
mm-hmm.
right? We basically took a portion of the money in fund balance and assigned it. So if you save $7 million in payroll, mm-hmm. that $7 million in payroll then goes where? Right? It's going to be available in fund balance because it's appropriated, right? So then thinking about that, you basically put a resolution in that says we're going to spend our lost revenue funds now or sometime in the future. They get spent on a big ticket item. Pick one. Or then you basically at the same time say we're going to with that money we save, we're going to create a fund balance, mm-hmm. and then we're going to assign that fund balance to a particular, back to the ARPA team for the ARPA projects, and we're going to spend it for those kinds of things that are out there. If you allocated all your funds and all of those things come true, then you're holding your grantees, if I can use that term, harmless with respect to time frames, right? And if they don't implement, then you're recapturing money that's yours. You're not trying to essentially recapture federal money. So it makes things, this is coming out of my head and somewhat of conversations with Nate and others. But the thought being is a strategic discussion somewhere like this, not that this is a solution,
mm-hmm.
but somewhere like this, I think really, really helps the ARPA team come forward. It also, quite frankly, is an argument for you to stay in existence, not to go out of existence in January.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, couple questions about that. So there's nothing in this resolution that says anything about making an assigned fund after that happens, right?
I think that what Maloney's trying to do is different.
Yeah, this is actually basically just deals with the small amounts of money that hasn't been allocated from sewer and water, from parks, from the Golden Hill.
And what you're talking about is everything that hasn't been, well, up to a dollar amount. I mean, we only claimed X amount in lost revenue, right? So what was, I can't remember, $13 million? In lost revenue or something?
But we claimed over $14 million and we've mm-hmm. utilized about $4 million. So the way I think about it generally is we have about $10 million left.
Right.
You mentioned basically the workforce and you know what needs to be done to get the projects, and the projects I'm worried about are agricultural crisis relief, Main Street,
Solar,
I hope to get to, certainly. But yeah, all the ones that are basically on the list, you know, we all saw it tonight, mm-hmm. that we haven't gotten to them yet.
Mm-hmm.
we have 1 year to obligate. And when we talk about like Main Street, which is a municipal grant program and getting all those municipalities into contract, it's a very tight timeline, even with the time we have.
Yeah. So I'm not opposed to this concept if I felt like we could really have a sacred vow that the assigned funds would actually then go to these ARPA projects, because you can assign something and then somebody else can say, you know, I really want to reassign that or want to drop that assignment, you know, unless it was a restricted fund.
Think of it in please, this is there's like 80 different ways that you can get through this process. The thing is to think about it holistically. And the thing is to address those types of questions that you just raised.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can address those questions, some of this would go into an assigned fund balance. But think about the fact that you're going to have contractual obligations in some instances. So you're moving those contractual obligations from ARPA to county money.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can't reallocate somewhere else.
Okay.
And so if you think about it that way, and that's how you craft what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
so you're not disappointing anybody that you've currently allocated funding for and you've currently provided the necessary contractual obligations, you're just basically changing how you pay for it.
The problem is we don't have a lot of contracts. So if all this was already contractually obligated, I'd say, great, that makes sense. But so much of this is mythic, you know? And so I'm afraid to mess with the strict ARPA, you know, fund line for something that is not even on paper yet.
The only thing I can say is, if you can't trust yourself, who can you trust?
that's a good question. So, but let's get back to this specific resolution. So what this resolution is doing is basically pulling the money from parks, pulling the money from water and sewer, and pulling the money that we've now tonight decided was actually going to go towards broadband. So I personally don't think that this resolution is the right way to go about doing this bigger conversation, which I think we should have this bigger conversation, but I don't think this resolution is the thing to do it personally. So,
and also at the very most simple level, again, it's come back next September.
Right. Exactly.
Timing of it.
Exactly. So. So I'm going to suggest
we postpone it till September.
No. I'm going to suggest we vote on
it.
I'm going to put this to vote tonight. So,
even without a sponsor friend,
do we have to have a sponsor here to vote on it?
No.
So, I'm going to say we vote on it.
Okay.
Call the vote. All in favor? All opposed?
No. Nope.
Aye.
No.
Okay.
Okay.
So, we get involved in that.
Nice.
All right. Director Doyle, thank you for those thoughts. I appreciate it, and I would like to continue that conversation.
Yeah, we'll be in touch on the other resolution.
That sounds great. I do think that, especially as the clock ticks, we should think about that, you know, because what we don't want to do is we don't want to ever put these funds in danger, you know, so. All right. Can I have a motion to block resolution 601, 602, 603, and 604?
Motion.
And
second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Great. And can I have a motion to approve the block? These are all parks contracts.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Excellent.
Proudly.
Great. So those all.
Wait, was that on the block or was that on the approval?
Both. We did. We
said. No, you have to do in a second vote.
We did. We did a second vote.
Okay.
Great.
Did we? Yeah, we voted on the block.
Yeah, block
we
it.
Voted.
Okay.
Block
sorry.
It,
yeah.
And
said,
then we voted to approve
it
the block.
Perfect. Yep. Thank you.
All right, Legislator Green. Thank you for your patience.
Here we go.
I appreciate it. I'd like to give the floor to you.
Okay, and I will not take a lot of time, but I do want to mention a couple things. First, I'd like to just go back and say that with workforce development, it's really important to include energy efficiency that is occurring with the ARPA, the RUPCO CLP, you know, where I see your EMT nursing those are important priorities. And then film, I don't think is such an important priority. That's just my opinion. But I want to be sure that that climate gets considered in every action that we take. And if you just bear with me one second, if did I lose it? Wait, it might still be good. Yeah. One second. Now, I'll send it around. Phil McKibben just released a statement, and it's called, "How is it hot enough for politicians to take real action on climate change?" And, you know, I just really want to encourage us. I know it's my soapbox, but it's also a reality. It's getting worse, and we have a responsibility. So, in that regard, and I'm sorry that some people from the executive branch had to leave, but the Climate Smart Committee sent to Energy, Environment, and Sustainability a request for a program in the 2024 budget to get schools moving. They're at all different levels of participation in climate solutions, which would include operations, curriculum development and implementation, and staff and student engagement. And the recommendation was for a position. We spoke to the executive branch, and they suggested both these would be the right place to host this. We had a great meeting with both these, ready to move forward, and something shifted. It is not in the executive budget. So we are, we being legislator Stewart and myself, representing the Climate Smart Committee and Energy and Environment, are preparing a budget amendment. And I heard through the grapevine, I'm not going to quote anybody, but that there was a suggestion that ARPA funds be used to pay, it's $150,000, which happens to be what's left, but you have other very important priorities, and I don't want to cut the line. But I do want you to know that that's in preparation, and we have a lot of support for that budget amendment, and I expect it would either come out of contingency or that's for our finance people to figure out where the funding for that is going to come. It has evolved from one coordinator position for 1 year that would be responsible for finding funding to continue the program and would work with all of the school districts and ultimately all of the schools in the county. It would not be to force them to do anything that's not already mandatory, but it would be to provide support and find funding not only to keep the program going, but for their implementation. And so that is in the offing, and if there were just $150,000 left and not a whole lot of other proposals that have been considered, I would ask you to add this as a consideration. But we spoke earlier, and that does not seem like a responsible thing to do. But I do want you to know that there will be a budget amendment. And the county executive is aware that this, enough of us think that this program is really urgent, because the schools should be setting a good example, as the county is. And so I just wanted you to be aware of that. Yeah.
So you're saying that the $150,000 is for to employ a coordinator that's going to set it up in the different schools?
It would be
in the different school districts? Yes. Okay. And then they're also going to be responsible for finding sources to continue the program in the future.
Exactly. Okay. To not only continue the program, but there is going to be money available for the schools to implement EV charging stations if they have electric buses or a composting program or energy efficiency or solar. And hopefully it'll become a team, because what is in the budget is, and I may have this position wrong, but an energy coordinator to make sure that the county does energy efficiency and increases solar generation and all of that. So that position is in the budget and likely to be funded. And that's a huge job for one person. But if a small amount of their time, along with time from Department of Energy people that have different expertise, the coordinator would be the, you know, feet on the ground, and the educator, the consultant coordinator, would be $100,000. With that would also cover benefits, salary benefits, and expenses. The 50, because originally both these suggested 150 for this project. The 50 would go to a consultant, and if anyone would like to, I can send around the consultant that's working, helping us develop this. We would like to hire them or someone with their credentials, because one way or another there would be a request, you know, a hiring process. And then the third position, and it is already in the executive budget, to make the Climate Corps year-round, one of those Climate Corps interns would be assigned to the project with a team of three and support from, for example, the UCRA would help with helping the schools to do waste audits. And we even have a thumbs up from NYSA, and they are reaching out to CSEA. There's a lot of support for the project, and hopefully, so I'm kind of, quite frankly, lobbying ARPA, since I know that you have other priorities, but I do want to, you know, make people aware that this is on the horizon, and I think something that would be a really good investment of public funds.
That's excellent. Thank you very much. Any other questions? Sorry. Thank you. Moving on. Legislator Levine, do you want to give us an update on village salaries?
Yeah. So I spoke to Vince McLaughlin, who's the village liaison to the planning board, and he's in, you know, one of the folks in charge of special projects for the village. It looks like, so they have two. They've kind of broken it down into a long-term project and a short-term. It seems like the long-term is something that we probably, I think, could probably be out of our ability to help financially. It's probably something closer to $4 million. Mm-hmm. But this short-term project that they're looking at seems like it's something that I think might be something that we're able to have some funding to assist them with. Seems like it's a replacement of critical infrastructure at the village wastewater treatment plant in the village of Saugerties. Project would I asked about the timing on this, because I know our restrictions on this and our deadlines. They seem to think that it would be something that could definitely be completed no later than spring of this upcoming year.
Oh wow.
Of 2024. And it would be, they're looking at a grand total cost probably of around $400,000. So obviously with the match, that would probably be, we would be able to offer them, in terms of I'm trying to just ballpark it in my head, it would be if for a grand total,
Would it be 200?
That's kind of what I was thinking. And then, and then they asked about the in-kind match. And so that would be something that they would be interested in pursuing, having the in-kind match for the project.
Okay. That sounds great. I would suggest going back to them and making sure that $400,000 is a real
number. I should have the concrete details hopefully tomorrow or Friday.
Great. That sounds great. Because we've got $358 still to put towards a project, and you know, if they're coming in low, they should really be very clear about how much money they need so that we can support them as best we can. That would be great to get this wrapped up, so that we can just get this sorted, get the contract process started with them, and get this one done.
I mean, the timing on this seemed impressive to me, that they think it's a project that can be done by the middle of next year at the latest.
And the project sounds right.
So. Yeah, it seems like it's a critical need for infrastructure.
So what do we need to do to get this rolling, other than you?
I don't know if we have to. This is a question for Amber, in terms of if we need to have
application.
Well, yeah, it's an application. Do we need to have it go through an app? Yeah, they actually need to have the application filled out. Because the resolution, it's going through the old resolution.
That's
yeah.
Right. You've got to get the contract. So they've got to get the application in so we can get the contract.
So will you have the application? You can get to Legislator Levine, who can then give it to them and get that ball rolling there?
I think we certainly submit the application.
Yeah. So, you can just send that off to my email. It's on the county site.
Perfect.
And I'll have the particulars hopefully by the end of the week, and I would like to think by the end of the month that hopefully they can have this application.
We can talk offline, but I do have a question about whether or not we're following the parameters of the original sewer and water.
Yeah, why don't you two connect about that? And
please, yeah.
Make sure that the project is actually connected with that.
Okay.
All right. I feel really good that if we can get this wrapped up, if we can figure out the next step for the parks money, and we've now moved that $150 into broadband, I feel like we did a lot tonight in terms of getting some loose ends tied up here. We still have some bigger loose ends like, you know, Respite House and Land Bank, but if we can get some of these smaller loose ends tied up, that would make me feel really, really, really good. So, thank you all for your attention. Do I have a motion to adjourn? A second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nate. I appreciate that. Yeah.
No problem. I'll be in touch shortly.
Bye.